It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
Tiger Talk with Pat Caputo and the radio voice of the Detroit Tigers, Dan Dickerson.
This one is gone!
On Tigers Radio, 97.1, The Ticket.
.248-539-9797 is the phone number. Ticket text is at 97136. I would love to hear from you today. Double D is here. We got some baseball talk. Dan, it, you know, it had to get colder. Couldn't be that day where it was raining and stuff and like 50. Had to be like 20 degrees out because we're doing Tiger Talk.
I know. And I just the only thing that's missing, that good 5-6 inches of snow.
Well, it was just a kind of a dusting. But, you know, the Tigers offseason kind of rolls on. We talked a lot last week in our debut about C.J. Cron and Jonathan Scope and all the different things that they're doing to try to get better. Austin Romine. I did a little research on this, you know, a lot more on that
trade. I would
trade.
Expect no less.
No, but, I mean, I looked at detail. I looked at pitch framing stats for Romine.
He's consistently above average, a little down last year, but still a plus.
Yeah, it was kind of in the average to above average.
Yep.
You know, his overall defensive metrics, all those different things. Looked at Griner's, looked at, you know, what Jake Rogers did when he was in the major leagues, all these different factors. And just looked at Cron. But the one thing that I came up with, and you were not overly impressed by this, but I to me, it was a stunning number because last week when we discussed this, it was like, okay, they need left-handed bats. And Cron, Scope, and Romine, all right-handed hitters. And here's the thing. Last year, the Tigers amazingly only hit 31 home runs against left-handed pitching. 31, which was 9 fewer than the Marlins, who actually hit fewer home runs than the Tigers overall. But you pointed out to me, and I thought it was a good point, is that the Tigers had so few left-handed bats that they rarely saw, or right-handed bat.
They were righty-loaded.
Yeah, they never saw lefty pitch. So instead of like two-thirds of the time seeing left-handed pitching, they saw it like four-fifths of the time. Or four-fifths of the time righties.
Right, yeah. The typical breakdown, I mean, it's usually right around 65-70% of your at-bats are going to be against righties.
Right.
It obviously varies
and Tigers
widely
are 80%.
From team to team.
Right.
And the Tigers had four times as many at-bats against righties than lefties.
That was a good point by you, but I still think it's a stunning number. And
it's
here's
a stunning
the thing.
Number, but you still need left-handed bats.
Cron and Romine and Scope combined for 22 home runs against lefties. So at least there's some power. And the Tigers, they're now that you got Bassey, you just heard the news, Brandon Dixon cleared waivers. He's on Toledo's roster now. He was their leading home run hitter last year. But none of the players on their current major league roster wearing the Tigers uniform hit more than a dozen home runs last year. The top one was Miggy with a dozen. So looking at it here, these guys double those numbers. You know, so they did, in terms of wins above replacement, they're close to average major league regulars, you know, 1.4, 1.6.
And at this point, it, not to interrupt, but I mean, sometimes we talk about WAR a lot, wins above replacement. Sometimes, I mean, that's a little bit below. I mean, two is kind of where you start
paying. Two's a major league average.
Yeah, that's a little bit better than that, really. But anyway, for this team, there's a lot of value in those bats beyond just a WAR of 1.4, 1.8, whatever it was.
You know what the average major league batting average was last year?
Well, it's been stuck right around 250. I forget if it sunk below 250.
It was 253, which Cron hit. Scope is at 256. Average OPS, 750. Those guys were above that.
Right.
So looking at it,
They needed power. They got two.
A little bit better than average major league regulars.
Going by my memory, I think every team, it's a dangerous thing sometimes, but going by my memory, I believe I looked up at the end of the year that every team had at least 220 home run hitters last year, except for the Tigers, who had, of course, zero.
Right.
So anything you do in the power department is much appreciated.
Yeah. So, and the other thing, too, on Roman, in 72 games, he had a 0.8 war. That's good. It's a cumulative total if you're good. You know, so he did all right. Now, his last two seasons have been, and looking up his career, have been outliers. But anyway, 248-539-9797. Would love to hear from you tonight. A couple things we're going to discuss today. First of all, you as a Tiger fan, what would be a reasonable expectation for progress in 2020? What would be progress for this team? I'm not talking about wins and losses. Ultimately, you know, you want to. They definitely have to do better than 47. That's just embarrassing. 47-114 is just embarrassing. But I'm talking about, like, what would be legitimate progress for the organization where you know they've hit, you know, the bottom and they're starting to come upward. What would that be? 248-539-9797. To me, Dan, it's about three pitchers, Matt Manning, Casey Mize, and Tarek Skubal. Because in my opinion, they're all high-end prospects who have all excelled at various points in double-A ball at relatively young ages. And the other one is the players that they got in trades, Rogers, Cameron, Dewal Lugo to a certain point.
To a certain degree.
What do they do ultimately? So Tiger fans, you know, can see some progress from some of the trade debt. Willie Castro.
So when you say progress, what are you talking about with, let's start with Mize, Manning, Skubal, all to the major leagues by when?
This summer.
July, August.
Yeah, I mean.
Not September call-ups.
Yeah, to me, it's they're pushing it like in May and June.
They're forcing the Tigers to make a decision.
Right.
I agree. That represents absolutely progress.
Dennis and I come on after the games. You know, you call the games and, you know.
And that changes the feel of the entire organization.
Absolutely.
If those guys are at the major league level in June or July.
And if they're lighting it up in AAA in, you know, May, you know, the Tigers say they play a game and we come on, you sign off after, you know, the scoreboard show or whatever. And then, boom, we come on and the first thing call we get is, where's Manning? You know, he threw seven shutout innings tonight. How come he's not here? Mize has got a 1.50 ERA. We want to see him. What's keeping him down? Pat, I'm mad at Al Avila for keeping, you know, that type of thing. Skubal, I haven't seen a lefty with stuff like that forever. He's dominating, striking out two hitters per inning. Get him up here, for crying out. What are they waiting for?
All right, beyond those guys, I think that you touched on Rogers, Cameron, Paredes. And then also, it seems like Skubal's a big surprise, right? Ninth round draft.
Stunned me.
Right? I mean, it's a huge surprise. Yeah. But it just seems like every once in a while, you should be able to be pleasantly surprised by a position player prospect who just has a breakout year that maybe you didn't see coming, or maybe you'd kind of given up on him because it hadn't happened in the last 2 years. I'm talking about a Kristen Stewart. He's only had 1 year, and it wasn't awful. But what if he just, you know, did the 25-30 home run thing that he did in the minor leagues? In other words, is there that to me is important this year, that they have a surprise breakout season from a young hitter. I think Kristen Stewart is capable of that. Willie Castro is interesting to me. He's got tools. I don't know. I don't have a feel yet, but he's got tools.
Definitely.
He is fast down that first baseline. Just watching him run. He can throw, and it's just mechanics. I mean, Jamer Candelario, are we giving up on him yet, or does he still have the possibility of being a 260 hitter with 25 home runs? It's in there. I'm not sure we're ever going to see it again at the major league level. I don't know. But it just seems like the teams that are going to take big steps up, you need to be surprised by one position player, or let's be crazy and think maybe two. Either live up to previous expectations or have a breakout year that maybe you didn't see coming, like Tarek Skubal.
Well, I'll say this. I thought, and this is said not out of disrespect for Kristen Stewart. It's said out of respect. I thought he was terrible last year because I thought that he would be able to hit major league pitching. I think he's got exceptional power, and he showed very little of it in terms of home run production. He is capable, based on what I had observed him as a minor league player, of hitting 30 home runs. He is not somebody – he's smart. You know, he's experienced. He's older now. He's strong. He's very
strong.
One of the
few guys who knows how to draw a walk.
Yeah, he does have some plate selection that he's shown. He can't field. That's, you know.
That's a problem.
You know, that's a problem.
I can tell you right now, that's a problem for Ron Garden hiring his staff.
So what he has to do is, like, really hit.
Rake.
I thought he's capable of that. And when I say that I thought he was terrible, it's based on, well, I thought he might hit 25 or 30. He should have hit. In that season, he should have hit 25 or 30 home runs where everybody was hitting them. Yeah, he was, but he, you know, even before he got hurt, he had that series against Toronto.
And he did go down to the minor leagues when he was healthy. So.
Yeah, you know, when he was in that series in Toronto where he, you know, he bombed a ball or two after he got off to that slow mm-hmm. start and it made a difference for him. You know, that was the Christian Stewart I thought would kind of, you know, in a year in which everybody hit 20 home runs, that guy, given his power, Dan, when he hits it, it flies. You know, if you batting practice, these different things. I've seen him one-arm balls, you know, 400 feet on pulled pitches when he was at Toledo.
So you're not giving up on him yet?
I wouldn't, but he, you know, there's a point where, you know, when you get to be 25 or 26, you know, you've got to do it. And, you know, but it's entirely possible. I think you make a good point. I think it's entirely possible that Christian Stewart, our view of him could be very different in July. He's capable of doing that. But he wasn't. I thought he was terrible by, you know, what his ability is and how he's.
This is like a dad talking. I'm disappointed in you.
Well, you know,
you watched him. You saw what his upside was, and you were. Just
I think he does as a
disappointed.
Hitter. I think he does have upside as a hitter.
Right.
I do. I genuinely do. Yeah, but I saw none of it last year in his major league. I mean, he at bat after at bat. You watch every at bat doing what you do. But I watch an inordinate amount of at-bats for somebody who doesn't have to do that every time. And watching Christian Stewart last year for me was frustrating because I know he's better than that. Or I projected him, you know, I think everybody did, projected him as being better than that as a hitter.
Oh, absolutely.
248-539-9797. What are your expectations for the Tigers? By the way.
What represents progress? That's Pat's
yes.
question. I like that.
And coming up, 7:45 today. The newest Tiger shortstop, Nico Goodrum, will join us. You're listening to Tiger Talk on 97.1 The Ticket.
Tiger Talk with Pat Caputo and Dan Dickerson on Tigers Radio, 97.1 The Ticket.
Waiting on the 3-2 here from Anaya on the way. Swinging a fly ball, center field, fairly deep, going back, Canna onto the warning track, looking up, and it's gone, a home run! Kristen Stewart, lefty on lefty, hits number 9 to straightaway center. Tigers are on the board, trailing 3-1.
And that was one of the positives.
That's
Mr.
good.
Mr. Caputo.
For Christian Stewart.
Well, that he did. He actually had probably some of his best at-bats against lefties.
Yeah.
I thought that was a good sign.
He looks like you mentioned his patience, the combination of patience and power. You know, an idea about the strike zone. He's not one of those guys that's got to guess at everything. Seems to have some pitch recognition ability. There's a lot to like of him as a hitter, but watching it last year, knowing that he's capable of doing more, I found to be frustrating. Just as a baseball fan or looking at it, observer, pundit, whatever you want to refer to me as. Dan, you're on 97.1
The
Ticket.
Guru, I think, really.
Tiger Talk, you're on. What's up, buddy?
Hi, Dan.
Hey, guys. How are you, everybody?
Hey, good.
Well, I want to talk about the Tiger outfield and the fact that we don't have a 1, 2, and 3 hitter. Cabrera has no business being in the 3-hole. It was too many double plays. He's hitting everything up center. They should make him a pull hitter and let him hit whatever, how many home runs as he can. Why we didn't get Dickerson, and why did Dickerson go to Miami?
That's a great question. Every team should have Dickerson.
Yeah,
really?
But we could have got him for that amount of money when we have no outfielders. And I'm going to tell you why we need Puig. We have no superstar to come to the game. And if you put Puig in right field, people are going to jump on that bandwagon. It'll bring a lot more. Give him a 3-year $40 or a 4-year $50, and I guarantee you we can get him here. He'll love it in Detroit like he did in Cleveland.
And I would also try to make a swap for Josh Hader. Jimenez with a 4-point earned run average plus. We really don't have a closer. We should have signed Shisek yesterday, and that didn't happen. It's okay, but I'm giving you a couple viewpoints that I study this all day long. And bringing Hader, here's what I would give up for Hader: Paradas, Rogers, Burrows, and Alexander, and I think it could get it done. Because only one of those players is going to be a major league player. We got all these Bushers. We had five guys last year that had a 230 to 290 OBP. And you want to tell me we got competition at these spots? Of what? That's my only question. You could field this, sign Alex Fiedo, and here would be the best story you could ever bring. Make a trade for Caleb Smith and John Birdie of Miami. John Birdie's from Troy. 276, 348 OBP, 17 stolen bases and 300 at bats. He could lead off and hit and have a, you know, and have like 350 OBP. We'd have 8 of 9 slots with balanced lineup, and Gardenhire is an expert on balanced lineups. Now you've got him with all these Bushers. What is he supposed to do with them?
Well, I think there's
Dan, I think we should put you in touch with Al Avila.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad you spend time doing that. It makes me feel good.
Here's my starting rotation.
I don't
rotation.
Agree with all that, but that's, you know.
Well, cool. Say we trade for Callis Smith and sign Wood. Now you got, bring up Mize because he's the best control pitcher of all the guys like Fiedo and whatever. And I study this profusely. I wake up every morning, grab a glass of wine when I sit on the can and do this. I mean, this is all I do. And, I mean, we could have Wood, Mize, Godley at a 5-0, and hopefully he resurrects, Caleb Smith, and Boyd. And you could give me four or five 500 pitchers, give me and trade for Hader, which what I would do, and I would assign Shisek. I would have re-signed Alcantara, Cisnero. I would put Norris through the pen because he never seems to pitch 5 innings. He can do 2 or 3, and I think he'd be a stud. And I heard, I think it that you, it was mentioned the other day he should go to the pen. And I think we could have a shot for our division. And it's not that far away if we just made four little choices, but they're not being done. And if Dickerson and Puig and left and right would have really rocked this out with adding Romine, who was a balanced catching hitter, and bringing Cron and Shope to the plate, we would have had a really well-balanced lineup, plus adding Puig and John Birdie
I've had enough.
He was on a roll. He did paint a vivid picture there about how his day starts.
Yeah, it was a little bit too much for me, and a little bit too much of, like, you know, because I can see through that a little bit.
Not quite sure why Milwaukee, knowing that 3 of the 4 guys they're getting won't ever be major leaguers, would trade Josh Hader, but just a little nitpicking
there. Yeah, and if you put a Hader, you know, if you gave – look, I don't know if that first of all that's true, okay? You got to understand about minor league prospects, they're like stocks. They go up and down, all right? So today's guy that is, like, at the top, he might be at the bottom, you know, tomorrow – and then he can have a comeback and he will be completely different. And the classic example of it is Bo Burrows. Bo Burrows still has a lot of potential.
Right. But his trade value right now is probably near zero.
But Bo Burrows, the Tigers have looked at Bo Burrows. He got hurt last year. He started out okay. Came back, he had nothing. He was completely confused. And so all of a sudden, Bo Burrows at like 22 or 23 or whatever. Well, let's write him off. He stinks. Well, the Tigers are—they're going to make Bo Burrows a bullpen piece because they see, you know, he's got a real good fastball, his high spin rate, and what they're going to do is have him go short bursts, and you know, he's somebody that in July could have a completely different view of. And if Tarek Skubal, who everybody's flavor of the day, gets off to a slow start, you know, then it'll be like, oh, he's really not that good, and he's a bust. Mize is a classic example of somebody that went up and down. You know, when you're talking about Casey Mize, the way he's talking about Casey Mize, I can tell that He hasn't looked at how they're looking at Casey Mize for the reality of what Casey Mize is. He got hurt last year. Two of his last four starts, he only lasted like two-thirds of an inning. And, you know, there's some issues with his health. And should he throw split finger pitch? Should he work on a change? All those different things. Casey Mize is far from a finished product right now. He is. I mean, he just is. I mean, he's the type of kid who can bring it together very quickly. But he's, you know, and if you're talking about somebody that could be like lightning in a bottle sooner than anybody else, it's Matt Manning. So he's right now further along than Casey Mize is at a year younger. But that could be completely flipped in May, the way things go in baseball.
No, I'd still love to hear from fans what they think about your question. What represents progress?
248-539
for 2020 Tigers as an organization, yeah. Not just the major league team, but as an organization.
248-539-9797. Pete, you're on Tiger Talk. 97 won the ticket. What's up?
How are you guys doing?
Good.
Good. How are you?
Good. I got a question to either one of y'all or both. And it really is two questions. The first one is with the minor leagues, what the commissioner trying to do.
Yeah.
What do you think about that? Is it with baseball attendance going down, ratings going down, do you see that as necessary and something that would help along the lines with the attendance and all that cutting back on the minor league system?
No. That's my short answer.
No.
No, I don't think so
either. What the league is doing in minor leagues, especially to franchises like Erie, which spent a lot of money, public money, doing what Major League Baseball wanted, which was to fix up their ballpark and beef up their operations, and they did.
Mm-hmm.
Can't remember the exact figure, but I want to say, Pat, it was over $10 million.
Yeah.
And now they're being told they may be
eliminated.
That's unbelievable to me, and it's just that's not right.
There's a couple things there that they need to look at, Pete, and I'll tell you what, coming up next, there's one thing in particular that I really think affects the Tigers, and I don't know what the answer is. When it comes down to it, but I'll tell you what it is coming up next. 248-539-9797. Nico Goodrum, new Tigers shortstop. He's going to get the first shot at it this coming season. He'll join us at 745. This is 97 won the ticket.
Fly ball, right field deep, going back. Judge, this one's got a chance. Gone! Dowell Lugo, opposite field. Two out, two-run home run. What a big hit for the Tigers. They've cut the Yankees' lead to 4-2 here in the fifth.
248-539-9797. You know, I don't know how it's going to shake out with Erie and all those things. One of the issues, you know, for the Tigers they've had down through the years is their double-A franchise. And Erie's provided some stability for them. It's not that far from Detroit as, you know, some other things. London, when they were there, it's a nice city in its heart. You know, people are used to it maybe coming here, but it was so far off the beaten path in the Eastern League. And Grand Rapids should actually be the double-A franchise, but there's no double-A, situation that's right. Remotely close to them.
The travel would be untenable.
Yeah, so, you know, they're in a spot there. And the one thing, it's something that I think hurts player development is – and I understand exactly why the Tigers have their high A level team there and always will. It's Lakeland. Because you go from playing in Grand Rapids, which, you know, has pretty good sized crowds. There's a lot of enthusiasm for the Whitecaps game. And you get promoted to Lakeland, and it's like getting promoted to like 400 or 500 people at the game.
Well, and I think that's generous.
That is generous, actually, having
really,
been to those
tiny
games.
Crowds.
There's nothing like going to the Legends Field and watching the over in Tampa, that big stadium. It's actually like a stadium, you know, and seeing
well,
that.
Same with Lakeland.
Yeah.
They're all pretty similar.
You know, and you sit there and you watch it and you're like, wow. And it's so hot and humid. It rains every day at 3 o'clock.
Impressive.
You sit out there and you sweat. If you go to the Golf Roast League game, which they play at high noon, you basically just sit there and sweat. That's not an exaggeration. And, it's 90 degrees with 95% humidity.
So what are you proposing? Move Florida?
You can't. You can't do it.
Okay.
Okay, but I'm telling you, it hurts player development. And you get misleading stats. Like,
you know, well, in case the pitchers league, there's no question.
Yeah, the ballparks are bigger because major league spring training.
Right, right.
You told me the air, you know, human error does things, but if you can feel the air there, and there's not, you know, the
it
power numbers,
your energy. You know, I mean, if you're playing in that day after day, it has to.
It's unbelievable. So, you know, I don't know if people know what that's like, but for those kids, you know, and baseball people have this view. They've always had this view about it. It's like, well, baseball is a grind, and that's part of it. You know, that's why you go down and you play in Latin America in the winter. So, you know, okay, I understand. I get that part of it. But I think to a large degree, it hurts development. You know, and you go from, you know, see, you go from a quaint ballpark, you know, like in Connecticut, to actually what is a double-A size city in Grand Rapids with double-A type atmosphere, mm-hmm. almost, and could easily be.
Sure.
And then you go to Lakeland, and all of a sudden it's like, I mean,
it's got to be a shock. You're going from 4,000 or 5,000 fans a game.
Yes.
At low-A ball, quote-unquote, to
50. Sometimes it's 50.
It's a tiny number. If you took
the scouts
it's
out.
Families and scouts.
And scouts. It's what it is. I mean, it's, you know, and so.
Can I just make a point about the idea of cutting minor leagues? And we're not talking about relocation, by the way. We're talking about Major League wants to cut the number of minor league teams from 160 to 120. I just think it's so short-sighted in so many ways. I read something this week that I thought was interesting. Somebody really studies how you build fans and fan bases. One of the things that determines whether you become a baseball fan is the age at which you attend your first game, minor league or major league.
Right.
And the younger you are, 5, 6, 7-year-olds, when they go to their first game at 5, 6, 7, the chances that they're going to become a hardcore baseball fan rocket. I forget the exact number, but it was quite stark.
Right.
And it includes minor leagues.
Right.
So now you're going to cut 40 teams. And you're going to potentially lose future fans because they don't have that chance to go to a game.
I think you lose future players.
You lose future players.
Because I think that the love of the game, and unfortunately, it's not an urban game now. It used to be an urban game in our country. And a lot of those towns.
But you're absolutely losing players.
You're right. Kids start at that age, and that's where a core of American baseball right now for top players is in that type of environment. You know, it's California, Texas, and, well, Texas has got a lot of minor leagues in it, and across the country. You know, a classic example, we talked about Michael Fulmer last year, Oklahoma. You know, that's a state that produced in that one year, Bundy, Archie Bradley, and Michael Fulmer in the first two rounds of the draft. It has prolific college baseball programs. And so baseball, people will talk about it just in the aura of major leagues. They miss the point of the game at the grassroots level. And mm-hmm. you're absolutely right about that. I agree with you 1,000%.
It just seems like they're nickel and diming. And I understand there are costs involved, and I get it that it's – but you know what? You want to attract the best young athletes to your sport? I think you beef up minor league salaries. You beef up minor league facilities. I don't think you cut.
But the other thing, too, is I think they have to – a few million dollars, okay, which is
– In a sport that's approaching $11 billion in revenues.
Yeah, 10.6 last I looked. And you know, give you an idea, the NFL, as big as it is $16 billion. So you're talking about – it's not that much smaller. You know, it's got a large revenue base. You will give $2 or $3 million to a utility player. If you give $2 or $3 million to an urban area to develop baseball, it's going to do you more good. They haven't thought outside that box.
It grows your sport.
But Rob Manfred says if they got a 10-second clock, it'll help. You know, I mean, that's the type of stuff that drives me nuts. Okay? Put a pitch clock up there and it'll save the game. If you knock 10 minutes off the game, people will watch more. You know, the games are actually 15 minutes longer than they were in 1960 if you take out the extra inning for breaks, of commercial breaks.
Right. When you pointed that out, I don't think anybody would have realized that, but you went back and looked. And I'd looked too, but you went back a little further than I did.
I went back to when they actually had it in some chart that I saw maybe on Baseball References.
It was like 1960, right?
It was 1960. The games, if you, there's 1 minute extra in between innings. I know that from the time that I covered it.
So that's 17 or 18 extra minutes.
Yeah, so
right?
In actuality, the games are like a dozen minutes longer. And that's going to keep the millennials from watching the game. How do you define action in baseball, you know? And Trevor Bauer, I heard him interviewed. And he's gone from being like, hey, this guy's a nutbag, to now, hey, he's on his own radio show. Because since the making of the MVP book came out or whatever, and, you know, since he's had success. But he said something that was interesting, and I always appreciate this about you. This doesn't define you, but announcers, the announcers who announce the game, okay, you have great influence on the game. And, you know, this would be my suggestion to Kirk or Jack Morris or Peaches. Peaches knows because his kid is a baseball coach at St. Mary's, Dan Petrie. And he helps coach the team. So he knows all about Rapsodo and all that stuff. He works with younger pitchers. But quit talking so much about what's wrong with the game. Because right. You watch not so much here in Detroit, but you watch the Fox coverage of the postseason. You know, when they get their experts up there talking before the game, they're always lamenting about how good the game used to be, kind of mocking the way the game's played now. Quit talking about a 21-year-old now.
Tom
looks
Verducci's
at a lot.
Been on this for a few years. And don't get me wrong, I like Tom Verducci, but he's been on this for a few years. And I saw a good piece this year. It's like, why don't you talk about all the things that are going on in between the action? All the strategy that there
Bob
is.
Bob Nightingale's another
all the
one.
All the things that you can talk about that these players are doing right now.
Every time
that
I look up.
That guy at first base, what's he looking for as he's trying to steal second base? What's that first baseman doing? There's so many things that you can talk about.
Well, there's a zillion and one things with the technology. Right. There's these things add interest to the game. You know, my suggestion in Fox Sports, you know, look, man, I want to see more of the StatCast TrackMan technology, things that actually matter. If a ball goes up in the air and a guy doesn't catch it and it looks like it's a question, they should have immediately what that catch probability was. Immediately. Because they have access to that. Things like that. Talk about, like, you know, and then people will have more interest in it. You know, but instead of like this, like, oh, yeah, you know, let's lay down a bunt or something. You know, does anybody really is doing this, talking about that, know what the bunt probability are, that your chances of scoring a run, the probability goes down 17%?
After a successful bunt.
Yeah, and that 98% of the time in the major leagues, they just throw the guy out at first base. Do they know that? You know, I mean, it's like, you know, these are simple things that everybody in the game should know and know about that watches it.
But, I mean, it's a debatable subject. I mean, the bunt's not going away forever, but it's obviously being used a lot less. But when is the right time to use it? Again, these are interesting topics because managers still believe who's coming up matters. What are the odds of getting two hits to get that guy home from first versus one?
Right.
So the run probability may have dropped, but with your lineup and the guys who are coming up, you just increased it.
And, you know, the book.
In your view.
Making of the MVP, okay? Far more pertinent about what's going on in the game than Moneyball ever was. The only difference is they haven't made a movie about it. And Michael Lewis was a compelling writer. Where these guys write about just the facts of what's going on.
The book is just excellent. I can't recommend it highly enough to anybody.
You know, read the book, The Shift. Read it. You know, and then you'll view the game in a completely different manner. It's just two books. Just do that for me. No, do it. Just do it for me and then come back to me and, you know, tell me pitch tunnel's Orwellian. Thank you.
You use that word like several times.
Well, it's because I'm getting sick of every time I say it, people look at me like I'm George Orwell. 248-539-9797. By the way, his book was what, 1984? That was a long time ago. 97 won the ticket.
Tiger Talk with Pat Caputo and Tan Dickerson on Tigers Radio, 97.1, The Ticket.
The windup, the 2-2, swing and a miss, and boy, just struck out the side. What a bounce back.
He just
seven
back
in a row.
It, didn't he?
Seven in a row. His 11th strikeout ends the top of the seventh inning.
That was Double D, Dan Dickerson. Talking about Matthew Boyd. Matthew Boyd's an example of a player who's taken advantage of the what the game is today. You know,
absolutely.
He's from that area of the country where driveline baseball is. You can't tell me he doesn't know everything about that. He definitely does. You can see the way he approaches.
And I still think it was a season full of improvements. And I know people always point to the second half ERA, but I will say He allowed 39 home runs, and it's definitely next year. Things I have to believe things are going to be different. In a normal year, that's not 39 home runs. I mean, let's face it. It was kind of a joke this year how many home runs were hit.
Yeah.
Things change. I think Matthew Boyd, people say, well, it's 450 ERA. No, he was a better pitcher this year. Lots more swings and misses.
Way more. Much higher
strikeout rate.
Right.
This is a really good pitcher. And I think when the ball calms down a little bit, those 39 home runs drop to below 30, you're looking at an ace.
I think he's, you know, we've gone back and forth on him in the past, but I think you may very well be right on that. I think Matthew Boyd is really, really good. I would never sell him short. But anyway, coming up next, a guy that's joining us, he's going to get shot at shortstop this year. Played pretty well there defensively. Has played pretty well at whatever position, and he's been a pretty solid hitter for the Tigers. And does have some growth. That's Nico Goodrum. What's up, Nico?
Hey, how y'all doing?
Good, Nico. Good. How are you?
Good, good.
So, you know, this is the big offseason thing. The Tigers have basically let the world know that you're going to get first shot at shortstop. I would imagine you're pretty excited about that.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of people didn't know that, you know, I played shortstop, and that was where I got drafted at. And my first 5 years, I played short. So I don't think a lot of people knew that. That's my primary position, and I broke into the league as a utility, but short is, you know, what I played all my life, so it's pretty exciting.
You got a chance to move back to shortstop really this year. You only played 10 games there, started 10 games in 2018, but 37 with the injury to Jordy Mercer, and just they were looking for stability there, and it seemed like you really did provide that stability. I mean, you impressed, Nico, in those 37 games. Just tell us, how did it feel to be back there? I mean, it seemed like you were home.
It's fun. Like I tell anyone that asks about the position, it's a fun position because you can show your range off, you can show your arm off, the double plays, the communication between all the infielders, the relationship you build to second baseman. So it's a lot going on, and you're in control, and you can read the ball well. And it's just a fun position. You have so many different plays, the backhand coming in on the ball, going back in the outfield on one. So it's just a lot of things you can do at shortstop.
You mentioned the word communication. You're after your manager's heart with a word like that.
Guards don't like that.
I know. He preached that just a little bit. But can you just describe, I mean, Guardy was out there so many days this year working with infielders. It's his specialty. It's what he loves. Just kind of give fans a feel for what he provides when he talks infield with you guys and some of the things that he wants the infield to do better, because I mean, with you at short and Scope at second base, this is going to be a better infield this year.
Yeah, Guardy just basically says get one out, and that's your focus. First, catch the ball. Next, throw the ball, and just make the play, the one you're supposed to make, and then the tremendous ones will come. But basically, his main thing is just getting out, and that's even with the double plays, get that first out. The second would be a bonus. So just doing the routine things and not overdoing it and trying to make something that is not. And that's where your mistakes start coming in when you're trying to do too much. So just keeping it simple and getting out is pretty much what Gary does. And he takes the time with us as infielders. He loves it. Any position you're at. So Gary helps out first, second, short, third, anything you think of. He's out there on the field being hands-on, so it's a good time.
You know, the fact that you're so versatile and play multiple positions and are a very good athlete and fundamentally sound pretty much where you play, Nico, probably helped you stay in the major leagues when you first got your shot with the Tigers. Yet at the same time, they start to say you're a utility player. And I've talked to players in the past sometimes, and they say you're a utility player. They kind of frown their face. They don't like the label. How have you, put that into your mind? And I would imagine the fact that they're looking at you as more than a utility player has to be something that you're pretty encouraged about.
Oh, yeah, getting to play a position, one position, and, them saying, it's this position or whatever they choose is definitely a plus size. Doing the super utility is It's a lot if no one knew. That's you know, you
how many gloves do you have?
I have. The crazy thing is, I literally today got in the mail 8 gloves. So I had another order before of 4 different ones. So I have so many gloves I can choose from and pick off of, but it feels good to be able to pick one, this year. But back to the Super Utility, it's just it's a tough thing to do. It's a lot of preparation. There's different, you have to do the different throws. So maybe you play third one day, and now you're at second the next one, and then you're out in right field, and all three of those are different arm angles. So just that alone is getting that, your early work in. There's a different hops at third base than it is at second. You change the whole field around, and that's so just doing that all year, different position every day, then going into hit, it's a lot of work. If no one knew, the Super Utility role is none to frown your face on. it's actually, a challenge to go in every day not knowing exactly what position you're going to play. But as a Super Utility, you know that you will be playing every day. So you just get your mind right to, when it's time to get in that box, you bang, and then whatever position guard it puts you at, you go out there and get your early work in, read your fly balls, or get your ground balls, and then, do your thing.
Were you disappointed you could never, you never get a shot to catch?
I'm not going to use the word disappointed. I wouldn't use that word for it.
I remember Gardner, Don Kelly got a chance to catch once. He caught 2 or 3 innings, and he couldn't walk for a couple of days.
Yeah, Gardner was just looking out for my knees. That's all that was. So I'm not going to say I was disappointed.
One of the things as a hitter, this is about the age you're moving into where you're kind of in the prime of your prime. And you've been in the major leagues for a couple of years now. But how different is it now, Nico, preparing in the off season than even when you broke into baseball with all the, the technology and different things? How do you prepare differently in the off season maybe than what you did when you were younger?
Well, I know the biggest thing is as you get older, you start to knowing your mind, a player that you are, the player that you're striving to be, and then you get set in knowing how you're going to achieve that. And you're not letting outside influences into your mind. You're able to pick and choose what helps you and not try to take in everything in your mind that everyone's telling you and then try to, do everything. And so that's when you're pretty much spinning your wheels at that point. You're not, making any movement forward. So, like I said, as you get older, you start to be able to know what you want to do, know what you want to achieve, know how to work smarter. And then you get more done, and the quality, you understand quality over quantity. Yeah. You don't have to take as many swings. You know what you're doing. You go in there achieving, and some days are better than others, but you're just able to pick and know what you want to work on. And then from there, you take that into the season and team up with your hitting coaches, and y'all come up with the best plan. And, you go from there. But as you get, your years in the big league level, you start to get, more confident, comfortable, and you start to understand what you can do, and you just take it from there.
Nico, I wanted to really ask you quickly about a guy that you had some fun with over the holidays. First of all, you and Jacoby Jones, the holiday games competition went right down to the wire, by the way.
Yeah.
I don't want to ask about you blew a 2-0 lead and it ended up 3-2 Jacoby, but
yeah, we'll skip that. Yeah.
But he's a good friend. He had a terrific year 2 years ago defensively, much improved offensively this year. The defensive numbers were down. But, we talk about all the different pieces. If this happens this year, things could be a lot better. But if Jacoby Jones gets back defensively to what he was in 2018, just describe what you see as a teammate of what the upside of this guy is. Because to me, outside of maybe catcher, middle infield, center field at Comerica Park is the most important position because of the acreage out there.
Yeah. Like you guys know that I played out there before, too, so I can understand how, how much room is out there. So I think that has to go into play when guys keep saying, Jacoby fell down. It's like, no. I play, I'm out there every game with him. So So I know the difficulty of covering Comerica in that sense, feeling the balls you have to get to, and then you talk about, you know, the shifts. So I feel that a lot of the shifts that we do, or, you know, that Major League Baseball has become and shift, sometimes that doesn't work out, and it seems as if he should have got to a ball that he couldn't have, but we have to go back to, you know, he was shifted into another thing. So I think a lot of stuff has to go into that. But he's tremendous. To me, he's tremendous out there. He goes, and anyone that can rob a home run, go up in a wall and bring back home runs, that's
catch of the year, wasn't it?
You're a top defender.
Yeah.
There's nothing else anyone – I don't think any numbers need to prove that, because I've played out there, and I have yet to go up a wall and, you know, rob a home run. So yeah. Adding that into, you know, doing that, that's saving runs. And, you know, I applaud Jacoby. You know, he goes and gets balls. He makes plays, diving plays, robbing home runs. So – people don't really understand until they are actually in center field playing in Comerica exactly how much ground it is to cover out there. So, you know, I'm excited, you know, for Jacoby, especially since, you know, that hidden started, man. And, and then that injury happened, which was, you know, a downer for us. But I know he's going to come back, you know, more ready than ever. So, I'm excited to see what he does this year.
Nico, we appreciate the time. Good luck in the coming season.
I appreciate it.
Thanks, Nico. We'll see you in a few weeks.
That's, no problem. Nico Goodrum. Coming up next, Pistons Tonight with Chris Pilar. And I'm coming up with Inside Hockey Town. That's coming up at...
what a night.
Yeah, a lot of specialty shows.
Talk to you next week, Pat.
97.1 The Ticket.